Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Welcome to Face Connecticut, an in-depth look at today's issues.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Face Connecticut on WTIC News Talk 1080, 96.5 TICFM and Light 100.5 WRCH. Aaron Kupek with you this Sunday morning, and we are pleased to be joined by the Interim Director of the Injury Prevention Center at Connecticut Children's Medical Center, Kevin Borup, on the first full day of summer, and we are talking summer safety for kids this morning. Good morning to you, Kevin.
Good morning, Aaron. Thanks for having me.
Well, things are a little different this year with the pandemic. Do the circumstances pose any risks that maybe weren't there in the past?
You know, I think they do. You know, Aaron, in the past, you and I have spoken about a whole host of issues from water safety and staying safe or in water, fireworks, riding bikes. But this year, I think there's a particular concern related to this isolation that we've been suffering under COVID-19. And, you know, I did want to raise the issue of teens and their relationships with other teens and what they may be feeling or seeing. You know, as COVID-19 restrictions lift, parents will be encouraging teens to, you know, get out there and see their friends because they want them to. But what we know about this isolation period that's been happening is that, you know, teens have more limited contact, and they may have limited contact to someone they're in a relationship with. And, you know, COVID-19 is very stressful. And in normal times, we know that one out of every 10 teens is physically hit or assaulted by the person that they're on purpose with, the person that they're involved with. And I think it's more than important than ever, and this is a difficult task, I know, but that parents ask what's happening, what's going on with their teen, especially a teen that's has an ongoing relationship. Check in with them, make sure everything's okay, and continue throughout the summer to really pay attention to some of those issues around mental health that might get exacerbated by this isolation we're all in the middle of.
How do you start that conversation if you're a parent without sounding too intrusive?
Well, it's a great question. I mean, you know, I guess I'm laughing as I say it, but the best parents are probably intrusive a little bit, right? I mean, so who are you going out with? Where are you going right now? How are you going to get there? How are you going to get home? What time are you going to get home? All of those questions that parents ask can be entrees into what's happening, and just being available. And even if your teen, your child doesn't respond at first, when you say, hey, I'd like to know, I'm interested in your life. I want to know things that are going on. I can be a sounding board for you. Just making that entree, even if they don't take you up on it, they may later. The other thing is, if you know they have a good relationship with, say, an aunt or an uncle or someone other than the parent, because sometimes it is tough as parents to have your kids level with you, make sure they have opportunities to connect to those other caring adults in their lives.
Now, some of the conversations you mentioned sound like what you should be talking to your teen about when it comes to driving, and there certainly is a link there. Unfortunately, we've already had fatal teen crashes this season in Connecticut. We're in the 100 deadliest days for teen driving between Memorial Day and Labor Day. So this is an issue that is linked.
It is linked. And, you and I have had this conversation before about graduated driver licensing laws in Connecticut. And it's important that parents are aware of what the laws are. And the key points are, one, in Connecticut, we have a nighttime driving restriction, right? It's 11 p.m. So if you're in your first year of licensure, you need to make sure that you're not driving after 11 p.m. The other issue is no passengers in your vehicle in the first year of licensure, other than family and after 6 months a sibling. So the passenger restrictions and the nighttime driving restrictions were put in place because the data shows us that one, the later you drive, that's when your risk is heightened for crashes. And the more passengers you add into the vehicle, the greater your risk becomes as well. So those are there for a good reason. And parents need to act like the air traffic controller. So children or teen drivers should be asking for permission to drive. And then when they're given permission, parents need to inquire, where are you going? Who are you going to see? What are you going to do when you get there? When are you coming home? And even what route are you going to take? Do you plan on having anyone in your car? And those questions should be asked to make sure that you're informed and that teens know they have to ask your permission to go out in the vehicle.
When it comes to driving habits and behaviors, not only for teens, but of all age groups, what are we seeing so far during the pandemic? At least anecdotally, are there any trends that you see emerging?
Yeah, what we are seeing is, although we have fewer people on the roads, we're seeing more speeding. The state has, essentially cameras that they log speeds all over. And we can really see in the state of Connecticut this increase in speeding. And it's leading to crashes and fatal crashes. So I think we need to be aware that right now, during this COVID period, what we're seeing is this real increase in risky driving behaviors. And so with your teens, I think it's important to talk to them about this and to let them know that they should, pay more attention than ever to the speed that they're going and to ensure that they maintain compliance with the speed limit, because it has become an increasing problem in the state, and it is leading to injuries and deaths.
Are there also opportunities here in the pandemic as people's schedules are modified, maybe to be able to provide a little more instruction behind the wheel for new teen drivers?
Absolutely. I think that's the positive byproduct of this is that, we know that teens become safer and safer with the more experience they have behind the wheel. So certainly we recommend that teens get as much time on the road as possible. The state wants you to get 40 hours of driving behind the wheel, and parents are certified that before teens get their license. But we encourage more hours than that, at least 100 hours behind the wheel. And parents should take these opportunities to get behind the wheel with their son or daughter and drive with them. Have them drive to the local school. Have them drive to, if you're getting takeout, have them drive to the place where you're picking up your takeout. Give them real experience behind the wheel driving where you can coach them and take the time to really teach them the best practices behind the wheel. And the more of these hours they get, really the more situations they're going to encounter, and they'll have more practiced responses to situations that come up, like what happens when you're cut off, what happens when there's all of a sudden a decrease in speed across the entire roadway. These are practiced responses that we all have, that we know what to do. And teens, we want to give them that exposure so that they also can get that behind them and have that history, so that they're not encountering a novel problem in front of them where they have to come up with a novel solution. And sometimes those solutions aren't the right one.
Now, with school out for the summer and maybe A number of teens haven't seen their friends in a while because they've been learning remotely. There might be an eagerness to get out and spend some time with friends. And I know that it seems that most teens aren't in high-risk groups for COVID-19. But how important still is social distancing and mask wearing and everything else we have to do these days for young people?
Well, I think we need to continue the guidance that's being put out by the state of Connecticut and by our healthcare systems, which is continue your social distancing and wear masks. So it's okay to get together with your friends, but everyone should be masked and you should be maintaining that social distance of 6 feet, which is possible to do. Go to someone's backyard and arrange the lawn chairs in such a way that you have that distance. The communication with other people and getting together with other people is important for all of us, for our own mental health. So I wouldn't want to discourage that, but we really need to encourage everyone to maintain those social distancing guidelines.
You mentioned fireworks earlier, and a number of towns have reported an uptick in complaints about illegal fireworks in recent months. Remind us the dangers of fireworks, especially when it comes to kids.
Sure. Fireworks, we all like to go see professional firework displays. And what I'd recommend is that's exactly what you do. If there's going to be a professional show, go see that one. Letting off fireworks yourselves can really expose you to a number of dangers. Many of the fireworks that are being set off are illegal. But for the legal fireworks, even those that people buy legally in Connecticut and set off in the backyard, there are dangers. And what most people don't realize, although they see, let's take the sparkler as an example, they see this pretty sparkler and they give them to little kids to wave around. That sparkler can get up to 1,200 degrees Fahrenheit. Some fireworks even get hotter, up to 2,000 degrees. Now, these are the types of temperatures that melt metal. And I don't think most people are aware of the extreme temperatures that we're talking about here. Parents, the best thing you can do is, again, keep sparklers out of hands of very young children and practice supervision with any firework, including sparklers. For any of these fountain fireworks, that the things that are legal in Connecticut, if you are lighting them off, keep children away from them, well back from them, and only have adults handling fireworks, and that's it. I think for the illegal fireworks, just don't do it.
We often talk about parents setting a good example when it comes to behaviors behind the wheel, but that also applies to risky behavior when it comes to fireworks.
Risky behavior and modeling by parents applies to everything that we talk about, right? Including fireworks. So if you have children and you're a parent, model the good behaviors, bring them to a professional fireworks display, let them enjoy those. And for the ones at home, don't do anything that is against the laws in Connecticut around fireworks. Just use the fountains. And again, for young children, they shouldn't be handling any kind of firework, including sparklers.
You are listening to Face Connecticut. We are talking to Kevin Borup. He is interim director of the Injury Prevention Center at Connecticut Children's Medical Center in Hartford. Changing gears, water safety is also a key topic as we enter the hotter weather months and more people want to cool off. What do people need to know about kids and water?
Well, this is going to be an especially interesting season for water safety, because what we know is that many of the town pools or public pools are going to be closed this summer or not available. So this will be more and more that kids will be turning to private backyard pools for a respite from the heat and just have fun. So I think people who have pools really need to rededicate themselves to safety around their home pools. One, making sure that they do have a four-sided fence around that pool to protect against kids getting into the pool when they're not supposed to be in it. And supervision is key to all of this. Make sure that when children are in the pool, that there's an adult watching. If you're having a party, appropriately socially distanced, of course, and you have people in the pool, ensure that there's a water watcher that's not in the pool, designate an adult where their job is watching the water, not distracted on their phone or anything else, but actually watching the water. And that will do a lot. For parents of young children, if you have a young child who can't swim or is a weak swimmer, we definitely recommend that they wear a life jacket, even in a pool. Make sure they have that life jacket so that they have that extra protection and sense of security when they're in the pool. That goes for boating as well. If you're taking your kids out on the boat, ensure that they're also wearing a life jacket, and every adult should have one as well. One of the riskier issues, of course, comes back to teens, Aaron, and teens will often go to other places, whether it's a river, a lake, a stream, and I don't know what's happening right now, but my guess is that many of these places that might have been normally guarded will be unguarded this summer. And we all need to be aware that, teens in that age group, that is the place where they're going to run into trouble, is a natural body of water. So I think parents should be, again, inquisitive about where are you going, what are you doing, who are you going to be with, what are your plans? And their really antenna should go up when they hear that they're headed to a lake, a stream, or a pond to go swimming. You want to make sure that that's a guarded area. And if it's not guarded, I would definitely not give consent to go there. Find a safe location for them to go. Find a water feature or site that is guarded.
As kind of an aside, it often seems that teens think they are invincible. And part of that is related to the fact that the brain hasn't fully developed until well into the 20s, correct?
Yeah, that's right. The parts of your brain that are responsible for risk-taking, and risk assessment, and impulse control are not fully developed in most people until the mid-20s, about 25 years old. So there is a different calculation going on when looking at risk in young people than in older adults. And I think we have to do some of that risk assessment for teens and talk to them about it and help them weigh the risks of what they're doing and the potential consequences.
Moving from water to sun and spending time outdoors, a couple of other risks I think might be important to bring up are the risk of sunburn and making sure you're properly protected, and also because we live in Connecticut, Lyme disease, and making sure you check yourself when you're out of doors.
Right, and certainly when it comes to sunburn, you have to limit the amount of time that you're outside, and usually the sun is strongest, or the UV rays, from about 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. And during that period, on a sunny day or even a cloudy day, that's when you're most at risk. So you really should make sure that you wear a sunscreen. The higher the number, the better, certainly 30 or over. And you want to apply the lotion, 30 minutes before you go outside, and reapply it, often during the day to make sure that you don't get burned, and to wear a hat, maybe even a long sleeve shirt, a loose long sleeve shirt on those hot days to keep yourself safe and to keep your kids safe. And also we get to the issue of exhaustion in the heat, and monitor your kids, make sure they drink a lot of water, and if they start looking a little high, get them out of the sun, have them take a rest inside for a little while.
I was talking with someone from the Connecticut Agricultural Experiment Station about Lyme disease and other tick-borne pathogens. And I know a lot of people in the pandemic have opted to add a pet to their family. And one issue that they raised was that, even if you have a young child who hasn't spent time outside and the pet has, the pet can bring the ticks inside and then transfer them to the kids.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that because we are in Connecticut, you know, ticks are definitely a concern for everyone. And you know where you live in your own area as far as how common it is to see ticks. There are a number of things you can do for your own yard, solutions that you can do to lower the risk of ticks. There are, of course, for your pets. You can treat your pets to ensure, talk with your veterinarian about anti-tick products that they can recommend for dogs or cats. And then scan the skin of children and other adults when they come in from outside to make sure that they don't have a tick in them. And you know, you can, if you know you're in an area that might be more prone to ticks, you know, make sure you have those socks, the long sleeves, long pants, and protect yourself from the ticks. I think it's, you know, overall there are, you know, over 75,000 youth are diagnosed with Lyme disease each year. And, you know, of course, there are many cases that go undiagnosed. So in Connecticut, especially, you know, consult with your local health department and with your veterinarian and take the steps you need to do to protect you and your family.
Also in the warm weather, it's important not only to highlight the importance of using child passenger safety seats, but also making sure that kids are not left in a vehicle even for short periods of time, and that the vehicle's locked if it's in the driveway, correct?
That's right. That's right. I think the first thing, let's talk about kids in hot cars. You know, you should never leave a child alone in a vehicle. If you're going into a store, it may be inconvenient, but bring them with you. The reality is, and what people don't realize, is vehicles heat up incredibly quickly. And even with a window partially cracked, you're going to see temperatures raised by nearly 20 degrees in less than 10 minutes. And so the inside of a vehicle can get really hot very quickly, and children can move into a situation of distress. So take your child with you when you go anywhere, and do not leave them in the vehicle. And if you're walking through a parking lot and you're a good Samaritan and you happen to see a child in a vehicle, you know, check to make sure they're not in distress. Call 911 and get them help. If they appear in distress, do what you think you need to do to get that child out of the car.
And with car seats, rear facing is still the best as long as possible. Is that what the research shows?
Absolutely. And in Connecticut, you know, we require that infants ride or rear facing until they're a minimum of 2 years old and at least 30 pounds in weight. So children until 2 years old should be rear facing because it's the safest position for them in case of a crash. So, you know, buckling up and making sure that children are either in a rear facing seat, a forward-facing seat with a five-point harness, or when they convert, usually between 8 and 10 years old, they may convert to a booster seat or until the seatbelt fits, they should be in that booster seat. So it's important that we ensure that all kids are appropriately restrained. And that forward-facing car seat with the five-point harness, you know, that will fit a child for quite a while. And we do require in Connecticut that a child be in that booster seat until they reach a minimum of 60 pounds and they're at least 8 years old, actually. So they're not going to convert out of the booster seat until they're between 8 and 10 years old. And then you want to make sure that seatbelt fits correctly over them so that the belt is going over the shoulder and not over their neck. That can be deadly. And that's the most important thing in your vehicle. Check the fit of your own vehicle to make sure that seatbelt is laying appropriately over them. And then we really recommend that children stay in the back as long as possible. It's certainly safer than the front seat. And so really until at least the age 13, children should be in the back of the vehicle.
He is Kevin Borup, Interim Director of the Injury Prevention Center at Connecticut Children's Medical Center in Hartford. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
All right. Well, thank you for having me, Aaron.
Thanks for listening to Face Connecticut. I'm Aaron Kupek. Enjoy the balance of your weekend.
Face Connecticut is a production of the News and Public Affairs Department of WTIC Radio.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.